England to Poland, every step across the ocean. The ruling classes, them is in a mess. Oh yes, the capitalist system a regress. But the Soviet system now progress. So which one of them you think is best? When are the two of them the workers a contest? When crisis is the order of the day. When so much people crying out for change nowadays. So what about the working class, comrade chairman? What about the working class? They bear the car, they carry the cross. And them nago forget them tongues in Gadans. Them nago forget them tongues. From the east to the west, to the land I love the best. The ruling classes, them is in a mess. Oh yes, crisis is the order of the day. The workers, them demanding more pay every day. The peasants want a lot more say nowadays. The youth, them rebelling everywhere. Everywhere, insurrection is the order of the day. There's a lot of people crying out for change nowadays. Nobody blame it on the black working class, Mr. Racist. Blame it on the ruling class. Blame it on your capitalist boss. We pay the cost, we suffer the loss. And we're not going to get new cross, not a rust. We're not going to get new cross.
Linton Kwesi Johnson, dub poet from Jamaica. Actually, he's a Londoner now. He's been a Londoner for quite some time. With What About the Working Class? From his 19, get this, those issues that he raised in his song from his 1983 album titled Making History. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And you know what day it is. It is Friday. Time to free your mind. All right. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. This is our peer-to-peer education session, an open forum in which we express our thoughts. I hope that when you express your opinions, you're going somewhere with it. You're not just taking up time and space. That you have a reason, you have a point, and you're making your point, and we'll see where it goes from there. 888-874-4888. Henry from Chicago starts things off today. Hey, Henry, how you doing?
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
All right. It's a little chilly where you are, I understand.
Yes, we survived the polar vortex. Wednesday it was like below 20. With a wind chill of below 50, so
wow.
What's interesting though is like today it's like 20 degrees and the temperature is going to be climbing. I believe on Monday it's going to be up to 50 degrees. So we're going to be
You're having a heat wave.
Yes, but we're going to be experiencing a lot of flooding now. So with all that snow and ice that got dumped on us, it's going to melt, and now it's going to be a lot of flooding. So the Water Reclamation of Chicago has already issued a flood warning with the sewage and everything. So we're going to be experiencing that. But I wanted to send greetings to you and the PRN listeners and the Lead Stories listeners. A great weekend. I know there's a lot of important things that we need to talk about. Venezuela, the cold that hit the Midwest, Donald Trump, everything. Even here in Chicago, the mayoral race, which is actually getting more and more crazier. But I wanted to talk about something that I saw a video this week. It was a two-hour video, and it was very, very interesting. And I don't know if you have saw this, Eutrice, but it was an interview. Well, it was technically an interview from 1971. Nikki Giovanni interviewed James Baldwin. And I don't know if you ever saw that video from 1971, but there was a lot of discussion on the table with very relevant topics of that time, which probably could be even discussed today. And what was so fascinating about that video was, even though they both had different viewpoints, diametrically different, Giovanni, you know, at the time being 29, James Baldwin being 55, you have the generational gap. Baldwin being from the civil rights era, and Giovanni, who was basically coming up in the Black Power movement of the 70s. You also had Giovanni, who was, you know, somewhat of a feminist, but she didn't, you know, remove her Black identity. Baldwin being a more practical person. They both basically kind of gave their views. And what was so refreshing about it was the respect that they had for each other. And you would have never thought that there was an argument, but it was kind of an argument, you know, between each other. But there was no shouting. There was no name calling. There was no talking over each other. They both were able to express their views, disagree on them. And I looked at that interview, I'm telling you, it was a 2-hour interview, but I felt like I wanted more from that interview. And, you know, I talked to you about this because I know how much of a great interviewer you are. And it was so refreshing to see something like this. And I was like wondering, like, what happened to those type of, you know, debates and discussions? Because it's like, it was technically an interview, but it was more of a discussion between those two giants of literary, you know, of Black literary scholarship, you know. And so, have you ever been in a discussion like that before?
Oh, yes. Many times. But it is rare. I agree with you. Because, first of all, the media institutions themselves have radically altered what an interview is. If you find an interview like the one that you were referring to, it occurred at a time and it occurred between two people who are not journalists. And yet they did a lot of journalism. But mm-hmm. they're authors, they're scholars, as you said, and they are genuinely interested in connecting with each other. They are aware that they're talking to each other, but they're educating the whole world. So they use their time very differently with each other. They don't have time to get, you know, to each other's nerves. They're not interested in provoking each other. They're interested in substantive discussion. So naturally, you'll get an entirely different product. Today's, for the most part, interviews that I see today are confrontational, people trying to prove their point and that exactly. They are right. They're not interested, really. They're not even aware. They don't act aware, even, that there are people listening. And perhaps one of the good things that they could do in that moment in time is to put the informational needs of the listeners and viewers first. You know, they want ratings, they want numbers, they want coverage of some explosion that is going on while they're on air. And we lost a lot. We've lost a lot. But I'm going to look at that. I'm going to look at that, yeah. Look for that, I should say. It ought to be very interesting.
Yes, it's very interesting. And also, too, you know, I was more in agreement with James Baldwin's viewpoint on a lot of things. But the thing about it is that I still respected Nikki Giovanni's viewpoints, even though I disagreed with them. She brought, you know, like I said, the conversation was so intelligent. It was just mind-boggling to see something like that. You know, like you said, the media sensationalizes everything. Everybody wants to get into arguments and name-calling and shouting over folks. But it was just refreshing. Beatrice, I would suggest you watch this interview and you
I'll go take a look. Thanks for getting us started today with such a good piece of news, too. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings, Utrice, and to the beloved family. Thank you, Mark. I don't know, because sometimes I'm missing you guys being a night owl, although sometimes I do occasionally get to, hear the repeat through the phone. However, I'm wondering if there's been any discussion of Elliot Abrams being brought in as the envoy to Venezuela and exactly who he is, okay? He's the one that was pardoned, and not for the actual crimes, but for two counts of lying to Congress. This looks like the incoming Attorney General William Barr was involved in those pardons by H.W. Bush around Iran-Contra. But he was involved, and I heard Alan Nairn, N-A-I-R-N, I believe it was yesterday, on Democracy Now!, and Alan was explaining, under the banner of the Cold War and, going against communism, the level of genocide and massacres, I mean, of all kinds of atrocities in Guatemala, in El Salvador, and in Nicaragua, in terms of the supporting the Contras against a congressional mandate. And so now he's the one that's being brought in on Trump's promises, if he acted like, he was moving toward peace. I mean, his whole personality is bent around always being angry and all. Has there been any discussion of this character, Elliot Abrams?
Oh, Elliot Abrams is an old hand going all the way back to the Nixon years. He's a perfect reflection of the mindset of the Trump administration, and he has had it for a long time. He looks very mild-mannered and very, straight up and down, but it is no surprise that Trump will surround himself with people who are compatible with him and his way of thinking, and more importantly, the way of thinking of previous regimes that started what he aims to finish, which is to ideologically turn the United States around, the whole idea about government and its role, to whom is government primarily accountable and responsible. They're taking orders from bankers and industrialists and internationally. They're taking orders from the global community. So Elliot Abrams fits neatly here. What I would suggest is that as you look at Robert Abrams, as I said, he's not a new entity. Not new at all. He's been around for a long time. Trump is reaching back into the reserves and pulling these people back into action, giving them critical and significant roles to play in the shaping of what he calls policy. So I would rather not get bogged down in the personalities. They're pretty much uniform in this respect. The people who are shaping policy, they all have histories. Trump has a history. Nobody remembers that when they talk about him, but he has a long history. And he hasn't veered far from it at all. So Elliot Abrams, I think, he's another one of the persons who have been brought back to life in the realm of policymaking in the Trump administration. He's just filling out the ranks. But they have a plan. They have an idea. They know what they want to accomplish. They know who they wish to serve. They know their priorities. and they're proceeding according to plan. The problem is we do not seem to have a plan of our own. It's one thing to say you have all this knowledge and you know this guy's past and his background and all of that, you know. Well, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to know it. It's like, what's his name? Trump's son-in-law.
Kushner, Jared Kushner.
Right. Mm-hmm. Jared Kushner's father is a felon. And a convicted felon. And in his new book, the former governor of New Jersey, who was trying to do something with the Trump administration, reminds us that he hired a prostitute to entice, seduce his brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
They had a business transaction that he wanted to get an advantage on, but it involved extortion. So, and the people that he was attempting to extort were his sister-in-law. So, you know, these are the kinds of people you find in the Trump administration. This is normal. This is normal behavior. So it shouldn't shock anybody that Elliot Abrams has been snatched and brought back.
And Utrice, initially he was one of the, what do you call them, the Never Trumpers, who was very critical of him. But when they offer these jobs, they run to the power, you know. But
it is not about the job. It's not that they are offered jobs. It's that they are offered opportunities to make money. Elliot Abrams doesn't need a job. He and others within the Trump administration, they're not there for the jobs, including his son, his sons, his daughter.
Yeah.
They're not there for the job.
I follow that. They're there for the power.
They're for the money and the power.
Right.
And that's
exactly
the hallmark of this administration. So we shouldn't confuse it. We have this idea that they have hearts and souls, and they think beyond themselves, and they see the big picture, and they want the best for everybody. No, they want the best for them, and in some cases, for them alone. That's what this
mm-hmm.
entire administration has communicated to us. And we need to understand that.
I have something very positive to share. I was watching CNN just happened to turn there between 8:30 and 9 a.m. with John Berman, who was interviewing another presidential candidate, and her name is Mary Ann Williamson. I don't know. She's a psychologist, seemingly. And she has an integrative approach. I remember years ago reading one of her books, which I can't recall the title. But she basically put out a statement and had a very interesting interview. She says, the way she approaches the politics, she said, we have a problem with the psychological fabric of our country as a low-level emotional civil war has begun. On too many ways to tear us apart. And she also went on, she says, in order to deal with that, we must address it on the level of our internal being. She has an interesting agenda. She's calling for reparations for African Americans, and she gave a very good explanation as to why. And she's calling for, and she has a website for her candidacy for $100 million over 10 years that would go to, similar to the way Germany did it, where they gave it to Jewish organizations that built, you know, that built in the repair. and Medicare, universal health care, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to put that out there.
What you've just said to me causes great concern, because people just, well, I don't want to criticize before I get a chance myself to appreciate what her position is. But that doesn't sound like a winning candidacy to me.
Well, everyone is not going to be.
You've got to run. If you want to win, you have to understand the rules of the game.
Yeah, but I think it's also about the dialogue, the conversation, because
But that is a naive, in my view. When we start talking about, the psychological situation, that's fine if you're dealing with the problem isolated from everything else, yes. The United States and elections in the United States and how you conduct an election in the United States requires you to be realistic. Realistic. Tell us something that we know you can achieve. Show us where you have achieved it. Don't give us, this is not the time for ideas. This is the time for execution of ideas that are good ideas. And we get into this all the time, especially in the progressive community. People at a time like this, when you know what the presidential campaign is all about, who is your base? Who are you talking to? Do you know what concerns them? I'm not interested so much in what concerns you. I'm interested in whether you understand what concerns me. That's it's as simple as that.
Well, you check it out, check it out, because sometimes it is about the conversation, and she's talking, if you go and look at that clip of that interview, she's talking about something that is the root of our present politics, and I think that's very important to add to the discussion, because we have almost a dozen candidates, almost. Cory Booker announced today, and it is a lot about the dialogue, and I'll continue to listen. I love you.
Thank you. Love you, too. Thanks so much. 888-874-4888. Bill from New Jersey, you're up.
How you doing, Eutrice?
Okay. How about you?
Good. Couple things. I really, in this dialogue we have, which this is the greatest thing on radio, this Free Your Mind Friday, I really believe that, and I don't think we thank you enough for coming up with this and giving us a forum.
Come up with this, believe it or not. A listener came up with this and suggested, that we have an open forum.
I'll say providing this. Whether you came up with it or not, you provided it. I would very much like black people in this country and in the Americas. And when I say black people, I'm talking about the descendants of slaves, because in reality, none of us are black. I never met anyone that was black. All the people of the world, other than white people, are varying shades of brown, including the so-called red man and so-called yellow man. We're all brown people, and but specifically,
well, actually, there are black
slaves.
People.
Have you ever actually met someone that was actually black?
Yes.
I have never met anyone that was actually black, purely black. I wish I could
black
be,
is
but
to the point of being opaque, but. As very dark, very, very dark.
Yeah,
and it's
very dark brown.
No, they're not brown. They're black.
Okay.
They deeply melanated skin. Very dark.
I personally have never met anyone who's black, but there also are not anyone that's yellow or anyone that's red. We're varying shades of brown, most of the people on the planet. And these distinctions of black, yellow, red are just ways of keeping us apart. For that matter, there's no such thing as white people. Essentially, white people are pink, but it doesn't sound as cool to say you're pink people than to say you're white people. They're not white. But anyway, that's another point. What I would like black people to do is first focus on your rights before you get sidetracked into other issues, whether it be immigrant rights, gay rights. You can't help anyone get rights until you've got your own. When a plane is crashing, the oxygen mask drops, and they tell mothers, put the oxygen mask on first before your baby, because you can't help your baby until you are helped, until you help yourself. If you have no power, you can't help anyone else. So I believe these issues, immigrant issues especially, are just a way of sidetracking black people's attention from their own rights. Democrats don't have any interest in helping black people get rights. They never have, never will. I don't know of any Democratic president that has been any better for black people than Donald Trump. Not one, including Obama. So,
but aren't you being a bit unfair? As the record shows, they may not have been perfect at it, but there are presidents who made an attempt.
Well, which president would that be that was better for black people than Donald Trump? Who?
I don't know. You know, I don't get into who is better for black people.
Well,
I like the idea of who is better for people.
Well, which president has done anything for black people? Which president has that been?
I'd say Johnson.
I know Obama said specifically, I'm not doing anything for black people because I'm the president of all people. But which president has done anything for black people? Can you point one out?
I say Lyndon Johnson. You cannot
Lyndon Johnson?
Deny, yes, the war on poverty was major piece, a real structural piece.
Well, Eutrice, that was 60 years ago.
But to
is
ask
that
the
most
question,
recent you
and
can,
I'm saying
you can
the record shows that. Lyndon Johnson made a very serious attempt to change politically, economically, socially, and job-wise, and across the board.
He did that for votes.
No, he didn't do it for votes.
He did it because
we can't be so cynical. Pressure was applied strategically from the grassroots and by communities that organized themselves along these lines, working in concert with the few African-American leaders and some progressives as well, and other institutions like the church community and others, and impressed upon Johnson the sense that it made, because by then Johnson himself had seen the real possibility, and in fact it had begun, an explosion in the United States, a race war in the United States. So we can't.
Okay. And you don't think that was vote related? I mean, wasn't it Lyndon Johnson that said, if we pass this, if we do away with segregation, black people will vote Democratic for the next 50 years? What, isn't that a quote?
But here's the point I'm making.
Well, he did say that. So it was about votes.
Even if he said it, we have to still take into account that he made a tremendous change legislatively, and he spearheaded a type of change that not only was long overdue, but no president in our modern times took on the issue of a divided nation as Johnson did. And he responded. It's not that he was, this was, you know, out of the goodness of his heart, but part of it was he really
I don't believe that.
But, you don't want to believe it.
Well, how can you make that assumption? Can you make an assumption that it was out of the goodness of his heart? What are you basing that on?
I am saying, when you look at history, you can't start from the point of view, you hate this guy, so he could have done absolutely nothing right.
No,
so
I don't hate anyone.
So if it is your view that Lyndon Johnson did whatever he did because it was connected to votes.
Yes.
Okay, fine. But does that change?
Which is what all politicians do.
No.
That is my point from the beginning.
No. You cannot make these blanket statements and say all politicians are so and so. I could say all architects are this. All mechanics are that.
Which politician? I mean, this is the essence of politics, is doing what's necessary to get votes. That's what politicians do. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. That's what politicians do, get votes. I mean, you don't really think that de Blasio cares about immigrants, and that's why he came up with the we're going to give immigrants health care because he cares about immigrants. You don't really believe that, do you? I mean, he's doing that to get votes. It's no different than when
he talked about his son having an afro. I don't mean this disrespectfully at all. But you've got to up your game here in terms of analysis. You can't just say that a politician does this just for votes. You may be
That is my point, that they do things just for votes.
The whole discussion
of immigration is about votes. They know that there are those that will, if you say we're against immigration, we'll vote for you.
Votes.
And there are those that say if you're for immigration, you'll get votes. It's just about votes. Democrats are just trying to get votes with this whole immigration thing and divert your attention from your own rights.
But if you take that view, understand you being extremely one-dimensional about it, and you therefore dismiss all of the other important nuances that ought to be considered, put in the pot. It's not a one-sided deal. Nothing is. So, yes,
the appeal to voters is
we can't dismiss it as a factor, but it is not the factor. That's all I'm trying to tell you. It is not
just the factor. I'm saying that it is the factor. There may be other factors, but it is the central factor that it is about votes. That's the way this political system works. It is about votes. I do what's necessary to get votes.
We have to put some more elastic here and look at the totality of things. The whole civil rights movement does not boil down to it's about votes. That would be a limited, an extremely limited interpretation.
I never said that. I said from the politician side, it does boil down to votes. I didn't say the civil rights movement. I said from the politician side, the politician does what is necessary to get votes. If he thinks
he
goes with that. If he thinks this is the way to get votes, he goes with that. That's why the Clintons went centrist, because they knew that was the way to get elected.
Do you appreciate the fact that it's not too many cases, but there have been cases and still are cases in which politicians are not responding just to votes, and they switch sides to their peril. You have Republicans identifying with the Democratic.
Are you talking about at the highest level, at the national level, like at a president level? I mean, mayors certainly, maybe even governors, but at the presidential level, no. I don't think there's any case of a president in recent times that has gone against what would get them votes. I don't think that has happened. If you can tell me an example, I would love to hear it.
I'm trying to tell you. And I go back again to Lyndon Johnson.
Again,
I'm not suggesting that Lyndon
Johnson
by any means was an angel and the great savior. But you cannot take away from him the fact that he took a tremendous chance, a gamble, as it relates to exactly what you're talking about, to votes. Lyndon Johnson did not have to be out there being seen as being sympathetic to blacks and Latinos and people of color. He didn't have to do that. In fact, that would have been detrimental to him, and he knew that.
I don't know that he did do that. I don't know that he did do that. I mean, where? How do you know it was a risk? I mean, one, I know that the corporate structure definitely wanted segregation to end. The corporate structure wants black people's money. They always did. So it wasn't something that the corporate structure would be against.
You're not dealing with the situation that has evolved in its time. You are talking in 2019 and prognosticating about what you think happened in the 1960s. And you have to look at the context. Conversely,
when I ask for an example, you have to go back 60 years to give me one. Give me an example of recent times where a president has gone against his vote.
It's still an example. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
It is an example. And we have in our progressive community the tendency to just dismiss that. And it deprives us of looking objectively at a situation. That doesn't mean you have to be madly in love with anybody. It means that you're looking at how things developed. What were the contributing factors? How did it play out? What the motives are also important. All of this is important. But simply to dismiss out of hand, and the historical record is there, whether you like it or not, or agree with it or not, it exists. The Lyndon Johnson departed significantly from white supremacist thinking that prevailed up until that time. And he took a major political risk. It worked out in his favor, but that was a major risk for a wealthy rancher president, a white man from the South. Don't forget, he was a Southerner, to side with what was seen as a Northern effort to consolidate black political power. That's a great risk. But he did it. He took a gamble. He was willing to take a chance. It worked out just fine for him. But that was not the usual formula. It was not. So don't, because you have a particular view, don't apply and paint the whole thing, the whole board, with this kind of paint, disregarding the evidence. This actually happened. Whether we like Lyndon Johnson or we don't, whether we think he was an assassin or provoked an assassination of another president or not. These are the facts. These are things that we can appreciate independently as facts. And that's it. We can still believe what we believe, but don't just wipe it out of existence because you don't want to acknowledge it. Yes, there were great changes that came about because people took chances, and it wasn't just for votes. We have to be more sophisticated than that in our analysis. Thanks for calling. Nathan from New York, you're on the air. Hello, Nathan.
Keep praying for your health.
Thank you.
I missed one or two days, and I've been praying since I briefly met you at Gary Noel Place on Broadway when they had that large meeting there. And
yes.
So I've been praying ever since for your health. And
I'm just
calling for the last caller was saying that he never saw. Okay, well, I'll start like this. He never saw any what you call white people or red people or yellow people. But I was on a train going south. I was getting off at 34th Street, and they must have got on these two black men, probably from Ghana or maybe from Senegal, and they got on either 59th Street or 42nd Street. And they sat down. I was about 12 feet from them. And one of them had on a black shirt. I think it was a long-sleeve shirt. I think this was around in the spring or maybe in the summertime. And I looked, and as an artist, I couldn't distinguish where the black collar ended on his shirt and his skin. And I kept looking. Then I would turn away. I'd turn my head away and look up at the advertisement that they have on the trains. Then I would look back again. And I still couldn't. I was straining my eyes, you know. At that time, my eyes were 20/20, you know. But now, you know, they have degraded a little bit, you know. Cause I guess you know when you age, because now I'm 80 years young, and my eyes are not the same like they were before. But I can still read without glasses, and I can read the newspapers and everything. But I still couldn't distinguish where the skin started and that black collar on that shirt ended. So I said, wow, so yeah, they really are black people, you know?
This is the beauty and the benefit of traveling. There are people in India so black.
Yes.
You can't believe it. There are
yes.
people, that's where the Nubians. Why do you think they called them the Nubians? They were a group of people who had a distinct skin color.
Yes.
So, and this is not unusual. I mean, this is not new. In China, there are people who are very dark. Very dark. So, you know, it's important that we open our eyes a bit and see the world the way it actually is, not the way we imagine it to be. Yes, there are black people.
Definitely. Definitely.
In fact, one of the most popular, I should say, models right now is a woman so black, I mean literally black, that people are inclined to believe she spray painted herself or something. This is her natural skin. We have that.
And the two men that I was looking at, you know, one of them, the one that was really black, his skin was so smooth, you know, and I was looking at that too, because I'm very observant. Well, I've always been observant, even since a child. I've always remembered being observant, because as a child, about 5 or 6 years of age, I used to look at people's faces and look how the shadows, how the nose makes shadows, how shadows are casted by the nose and then under the lip out and then the corner of the eyes. I would always look at that, and I would look at the wrinkles of clothing and the highlight, you know. But the skin was so smooth, I didn't see not one pimple, you know.
All throughout West Africa, I mean, it surprises me to hear that people are surprised that there are truly black people. It surprises me.
Because I've heard, you know, like years and years ago, I said, well, you know, we're not, there's no such thing as black people. We're like, you know, we can be chocolate brown, Van Dyke brown, but not black. Oh, no, I've, but this was about 10 years ago. This person was black. I couldn't
black
distinguish.
People, they think themselves as, you know, they are members of this tribe, if you will, or this culture, or this civilization. They don't go around saying that they're black.
Right. That only started maybe, what, in about like a 17th century of labeling people, you know, white and yellow and red and whatnot. You know, that just, you know, just like that person before me calling. He never saw any red person or yellow person, you know, or white person. I never did either, you know.
But we need to understand. Here's a good example of what we just talked about.
Yeah.
Who invented these categorizations on the basis of color of your skin as opposed to your culture and the civilization you come from? Who did that? Did black people invent the term for themselves?
No.
The indigenous people invent the term for themselves? No.
No.
This is what a racist, white supremacist culture, this is their formulation to categorize people as a form of control. You know, it's like that old army joke where the general says, in the army there's no discrimination, we're all green. Now, the dark green people, you go over there, and the light green people, you go over there. It's mind-boggling how these things come to be. And they come to be because we don't question them. They're so illogical, they're so wrong, but it comes with a power to enforce these definitions. And so everybody follows the rules. Thanks so much, Nathan, and thank you for your kind thoughts and your prayers. Thank you so much. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Beatrice.
How are you?
Hello. And good afternoon.
Thank you.
Hear me?
You too.
And to the family. Listen, I'm not as articulate as Harvey or Patricia, but I know what I'm thinking. First of all, our minds, most of us have let somebody take our mind. That's one of the biggest problems. But I'm not. That's why we have Trump, to prove that. Because there's no, and we have people advocating that Democrats, whatever you want to advocate, it does not matter. Especially African people, two African people, because it does not matter which one takes office or is in power. All three parties have decided on one thing and one thing alone. Well, let's crush these Negroes. That's the bottom line. And if you can't see that and understand that, there's something wrong with you. Now, in order, we have to do what we want for ourselves. This is our problem. Not the Democratic, Republican, Trump, none of them. It's not our problem. We, for example, if you, a classic example, just look at the Nation of Islam. They're doing exactly what they want. Does not matter what you say. They're following an agenda. African people first. The civil rights movement, the CLC, and many other movements opened doors for other people. And once they went through the door. Oh, they closed the door in our face. No, not this. You're not going to do this to us. That's why I support the Nation of Islam. Simple. You see what I'm saying? Now, I must say something about your president. You know, just like you were saying just now, you have to look at things for what it is. I try to. Maybe I'm off. That's why I'm listening to you. Because you are raising my level of consciousness, and you're the other finest. You're doing things that nobody else that can do. Shutting down the government and people are not being paid. I said, well, okay, let's look at it. And you could correct me on this. Well, people didn't get paid for three weeks, right? Now, all this hooping and hollering and yelling and screaming. Wait a second. The way from my perspective, you have worked us from sun up to sundown for 400 years. And you didn't find a problem with that. Now you're screaming about 3 weeks. We were told pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, right? No, we didn't even have a boat. So what's your problem? It's only 3 weeks.
Well, I think you appreciate the argument here, and it wasn't whether people could pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. This was a situation in which the president of the United States selected federal workers who had gone through all the things that they needed to go through to qualify for a job. They got the job. They've been working on the job in many cases for many, many years. And suddenly the president decides that he's going to put them on furlough. That is a major violation of the law. You can't just arbitrarily stop somebody's employment, and you can't arbitrarily say that you are on furlough, but you are expected to report to work and to work, and you won't be paid. Now, where in the world, where in our history has this been the case where this is allowed? That is the issue. The issue is the president far exceeding his power and authority and doing so to 800,000 people. I still can't understand how this country still is governable after an action like that.
But you, trees. This was the same government, so-called government, that made us work from sun up to sun down, and it was legal. I'm not just in the law.
Same government, and we have to make a distinction here. It's not the same government. This is, we're talking about Donald Trump. If you're talking about slavery and the days of slavery, the days of Reconstruction, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, we see that in its proper context. This is a whole different context. It's not the same government. It may be a different government applying the same philosophy, but it's not the same government, of course.
Well, from my perspective, the way I see it is that, you know, I don't have a problem with it. Here's why. Because, you see, when Trump was campaigning to be president, he was saying that, you know, the things he was saying about us, our people, all right, okay, fine. You voted for him. But what you didn't know is that what he's doing now is making everybody in America, except his friends and family, slave masters. He's been making everybody slaves. That's what he's attempting to do, in my judgment. I have no problem with that. At least there won't be any discrimination. Everybody will be slaves. Everybody will understand what we have went through. Simple.
So walk me through that phrase. I don't have a problem with that.
I don't have a problem with that. Because
what is it specifically you don't have a problem with?
Well, since no one, most people, I'm not saying that there weren't people who was against slavery. However, the way our people is treated, demonized, this abuse, okay, what Trump is doing now is making everybody save. What do you may call it?
So you're saying that because he's making no distinguishing, he's not distinguishing between anybody. He's just straight across the board. Everybody,
Japanese, everybody. You call that?
And
equality.
In your view, is a sense will equalizes people in their suffering.
Everybody. Because if you, one of the most powerful term I've heard, quote, injustice anywhere, Martin Luther King said it, is injustice anywhere is, what did he say again? Injustice is a threat.
Blood to justice everywhere.
Everywhere. Now we'll see what he really means, because this guy has no regard for nobody but himself, his family, and his friends, and he still can't see that. And the only way to, I believe, is to bring people to look at other people and treat other people as they want to be treated. It's just what these guys doing. Because they don't care about no color. He cares about one thing alone, is money. That's the bottom line. And in that note, I say we have to do for ourselves what we want, not what anybody else wants.
What is the thing that we have to do for ourselves? You keep saying we have to do something for ourselves, and this action by Trump proves the point. But what are the things that we have to do for ourselves?
The first thing I think is respect. That's number one. Because we have no respect. Most of us have no respect for one another. And organized. Kwame Ture has always talked about it. And organized lie is more effective than a disorganized. This is why they do the things they do to us. Because there are other people in this country. You can't even say it. Look at.
You have to leave it there. I'm sorry, we're out of time. Thank you so much. Thank you all for contributing so meaningfully today. As always, thank you for the high levels at which you are participating in this program. Thank you so much. Have yourselves a great weekend. Surround yourselves with positive people. And we'll see each other Monday. And go back at it again. Bye-bye.